You're listening to the Chancellor's Report on 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Dave Edwards, and pleased to be joined in the studio, as I am every month, by the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, Michael Lovell. Mike, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks, Dave.
So in the university world, you guys call it a plenary address. I would call it a State of the University address. But you gathered some 500 faculty, staff, and students together to sort of give them your perspective on where the university stands. And you made a couple of really interesting points here that I think it's really worth talking about. First, there's a lot to do with just sort of the way the university is operating, budgets and the like. And there's actually some good news this year for a change.
Well, I guess if you want to call it good news, this is the first year in my tenure that we're not facing budget cuts, which is really
That's
exciting for us. Yes. And so it makes it a much different start of the year when you don't have to worry about where you're going to, you know, how you're going to balance your budgets. And, you know, we even have some, you know, preliminary indications there may even be a pay plan for some of our employees, which would just be phenomenal. You know, the state has a budget surplus this year, and so we're hoping, particularly with some of the publications that have come out recently with Gannett, if you've seen some of those, where it showed how underpaid our employees are, particularly compared to those at the technical colleges. You know, a bunch of stories ran across the state. So I think that the public opinion is swaying that, you know, that it's being recognized that, you know, we do need to protect and pay our employees, and we may actually have some money in the state to do so.
Now, in the past, and even, you know, sort of in your first year as chancellor, you talked about sort of a growth agenda, and some of those things you were able to move forward on. Some of the things I know probably slowed because of the budget situation. Is that part of the picture now?
Yeah, I think so. We have a couple of proposals in. One is part of a UW system growth agenda proposal, where all the campuses would get some money, particularly in ways that they think they can help with economic development. And then we have a second proposal. David Ward and I from Madison have a larger to be split between the Milwaukee and Madison campuses, specifically targeted to help hire faculty and develop facilities in areas where the state of Wisconsin has a competitive strength, and we want to bolster that in areas of like water, energy, biotech, and food and beverage, where we can really develop some national centers of excellence. So not only would we bring in expertise from outside the state here to make us stronger, but then make us more nationally competitive so that not only will the campuses do well, but also the industries in those areas would get a great benefit.
Yeah. What areas are those?
Well, I think, like I said before, like water, energy, biotechnology, and food and beverage would be the main areas where we're looking to bolster some new faculty.
You said something else very significant there. You said that you and David Ward, and for those who don't know, David is the chancellor of UW-Madison, your counterpart there. Mm-hmm. And I think what's significant is you said the two of you are proposing, and I think for a lot of people, they see the Madison and the Milwaukee campus in competition, especially for dollars, mm-hmm. and yet you're proposing this initiative together. Why?
Well, I think this was – I mean, first of all, David Ward and I recognized that we are the two research campuses for the state, and by working together, we think we can accomplish more. We're both very open to this, and I think this is maybe the first time, and certainly since I've been here, if not ever, that Milwaukee and Madison are working together on their budget plans to try to really, really help the state and do it in a way that we would not duplicate but really enhance what each other are doing, and really for the benefit of all the people in the state, particularly in these areas where really Wisconsin already has an advantage and we really want to help it get over the top.
Well, it'll be very interesting to see how the legislature, how the regions react to that, because it is that kind of a joint proposal.
Yeah. And one of the, you know, one of the challenges we have is, you know, we this proposal that we do have to help grow in these areas, you know, it's specifically for the two research campuses. And so, you know, obviously there's a lot of out-of-state legislators. Well, what about my local campuses,
right,
you know, that may be? But, I, you know, I'm a true believer that by investing in the two research universities is the best way to really jumpstart the economy. And these are based on some things that I saw when I was in Pittsburgh over a period of a decade. And the areas where Pittsburgh grew were the areas where the research universities had strength and the state invested funds there. And they did bring in national centers of excellence. And those helped attract new companies and started new companies. And I believe we can do the same thing here in Wisconsin.
Well, research obviously is very important for a university like UW-Milwaukee. But what about enrollment? I mean, just what are the enrollment trends looking
well,
like?
Well, we know in my fall plenary, I talked about something that I was concerned about was for the second straight year, we had a decrease in enrollments. And so we really needed a strategy both short term to immediately stop when kind of the bleeding and stop the negative trend, and then actually some other ways we can actually get the growth, because we really have a target of getting to about 3,300 or 3,400 33,000 or 34,000 students on our campuses over the next 5 to 6 years. And so we've done a lot to immediately try in the next year to try to address the downward trend so that we can actually stabilize the enrollments. But then we're also implementing several things to actually help grow the enrollment to 3,000 or 4,000 students for the next 5 or 6 years.
So how do you do that? What are your strategies?
Well, I think in the short term, one of the first things we did is we've actually restructured our enrollment management department and really having some greater efficiencies. And it's really paid off by kind of reorganizing. For example, this spring semester, we have over 1,000 transfer students, and we were able to transfer their credits for 99% of those students before they actually arrived on our campus for the spring semester, which is just phenomenal. We're very proud of that. And we are continuing, actually, to do mailings, several hundred thousand mailings to graduating seniors to not only Wisconsin but 7 other states. And so really do a blitz of a kind of a marketing campaign, you know, and really trying to hit a lot of folks maybe we haven't touched before. You know, I believe that in total we're doing our mailings to about 8 to 10 times more students than we've done in the past.
Wow.
To try to reach a greater population.
Including probably the Illinois market.
Oh, definitely. You know, Illinois is probably, if we look at our growth potential, you know, along with international students, Illinois is definitely the market we want to move to. So some of the things we're doing in the longer term, first is you may have read in January, UW-Platteville was the fastest growing university in the system.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why that is because they have something called a tri-state initiative. So for about $4,000 over in-state tuition, Iowa and Illinois students can go to UW-Platteville as part of this tri-state initiative. And so one of the things that I've talked to the UW system about was doing a similar initiative at UWM, and I've had very positive feedback from them, so we're moving forward with some proposals to create an initiative, a similar initiative at UWM, where we just wouldn't target Illinois, but we maybe look at Indiana and Michigan as being our targets for an initiative where we have a similar, where they'd pay about $4,000 more than out-state. Than in-state tuition for those students out of state. And the nice thing is that our tuition at that point is still less than these other states' in-state tuition for their institutions, which is really makes it attractive for us to go there. Another thing we're doing immediately is hiring a Chicago-based recruiter as soon as possible. One of the things, we had a chancellor's retreat a few weeks ago, and at the retreat, Dennis Shields, who's the chancellor at Platteville, was talking about the Tri-State Initiative. He talked about how it really took off once they hired a full-time recruiter in Chicago, and they literally get more than 200 students a year just because of that, from that one recruiter that's based in Chicago through the tri-state. Another another chancellor said, yes, we hired a Chicago-based recruiter last year, and we had 180 more students from Chicago based on that recruiter. And so it's pretty clear that if we want to tap that market, having a full-time recruiter there makes a lot of sense, particularly the fact that I think it pays for itself for 7 out-of-state students, you know, from Chicago.
So this sounds like just like a professional, like athletes being recruited into college programs, right? Yeah. You've got to have the recruiters, get to know the coaches, get to know the advisors.
That's right.
And it's so competitive.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And now that, I mean, we really think we have a lot to offer as a campus, you know, not only with our academic programs, but once we get students on our campus, they tend to matriculate there. So the idea is make students, particularly in Illinois and in northern suburbs of Chicago, aware of UWM and, you know, what a great campus we have.
Mm-hmm. We've talked previously on the show not only about enrollments but retention. Has that gotten better? Is that still a target of your work?
It's definitely still a huge part of what we want to do. And so our retention, we still have a graduation rate of about 42% over 6 years, which has been stable for the last few years. And we want to increase that to 50%. And actually, you might think 42 sounds really low, but for our peer institutions across the country, urban institutions like ours, we're right at the average.
That is amazing. That sounds incredibly low.
Because when you think about, you know, a school like Madison, La Crosse, or Eau Claire, where they're in the 80%, you can understand the kind of the different demographic we have a population. We have a lot of students that are in and out, you know, because they're working full time, they have families. And so, but as we become more traditional campus, we think that those retention numbers should go up. So we really have a target again over the next 5 years to get to 50% retention rate.
To what extent does the economy impact all of this? I mean, do you see waves? I mean, now that the economy is supposedly getting a little bit stronger, does that impact enrollment?
Oh, definitely. And again, one of the challenges we have is we have so many students that work, you know, so many hours or even full time, as the economy gets better and they can work more, it'll slow down their ability to generate credits towards graduation because they'll take less classes because they're working more. And so you definitely see there's an ebb and flow with how the economy is and how many students are enrolling on our campuses.
Mm-hmm. You've talked about taking a look at the graduate school and trying to take a look at how that can operate maybe more efficiently, more effectively. Where are you on that?
Yeah. And so one of our goals, obviously, is not only to recruit more undergraduate students, but actually to have more graduate students on our campus, you know, for two reasons. One, as we do more research, we want to have graduate students to help us perform that research. And we also want to have more professional students on our campus, you know, maybe doing professional masters or increasing their education in different ways. So one of the things we're doing is we've just made some decisions about how we're going to reorganize the graduate school. And what we've decided to do was to have two separate individuals, one have a dean of the graduate school and have a vice provost for research. And so that position used to be one. We essentially had a dean of the graduate school and a vice chancellor for research as one person, and we decided to have two separate individuals, one focus on really the graduate education piece and one focusing on the research piece, because both of those are critical to our future and our growth plans. And so by having two individuals focusing 100% of their time on each, we believe that's the best way to move us forward.
Mm-hmm. Is that pretty much the way other institutions organize their grad school programs?
It's interesting because what we did, we actually, to making this decision, we had two separate committees. We had a committee over the summer look at what are the different models across the country on the way that research and graduate programs are organized. And from that, they found about 14 different models, of which they looked at them. They looked at them and pared it down to four that they thought would make sense for our campus. And then we had a separate this fall look at those four and really dig deep into them and what would the pros and cons be particularly for our campus. And of those, two models emerged as that they thought was best, coming to the recommendation to myself, one being a single person to serve as dean of the graduate school and vice provost of research, and the other one being two separate people. And again, there are pros and cons with each, but we really felt like the second model with two people made the most sense for our campus. And again, like the recruiter, if the vice provost for research brings an extra $750,000 in federal funds to our campus, that position pays for itself. So fiscally, it makes a lot of sense.
Sure. One of the other themes that you struck in your message to the campus community had to do with the way university teaching, learning, how it's all evolving and how it's changing very quickly, and of course then how UWM has to respond. And it seems like every time we pick up the paper, we're seeing some new way in which some university is trying to engage students in this changing technological environment.
Yeah, it's just amazing. You know, and there was recently a New York Times article and brief video they had, and it struck me at the very end of the video. You have this expert, I believe he was from the University of Pennsylvania, saying, you know, we're really in the Wild West right now. The things are changing so fast, and it's true. Every time you read up and pick up a national publication, there is changes going on in higher ed, and it's what really the way I describe it is: it's for the first time, the internet and technology is hitting the universities and higher ed the way it hit other sectors, you know, of our country. You know, I described, you know, 15 years ago, how when you went shopping for Christmas or for holiday gifts, you would go to the mall and actually physically touch and pick out. Now, more than 50% of those purchases are done online, and so industry had to quickly change to the dynamics of people using technology and the internet to provide goods and services. Well, now you have the top universities in the country putting their course content on the internet for free.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really causes a decoupling of the instruction and course content and the actual, you know, assessment for credit that universities do. And so the instruction and the assessment of credit really, you see, are some really significant decoupling going on. So it creates an interesting dynamic, particularly when you have these massive open online courses, they're called MOOCs, where you have hundreds of thousands of students sometimes, you know, enrolling in these courses, you know. And in fact, the first one was done last year, artificial intelligence in Stanford. They had 160,000 students enroll from 19, I think it was 19 different countries, or maybe it was even more different countries than that, you know, in this course. It was just amazing. And then obviously, you know, there's the whole idea, okay, how are you going to evaluate whether the students are getting, you know, learning the right skills and competencies in this course? And then how ultimately would you determine if these students deserve to get credit? And so I think that, you know, that really has an interesting interplay with higher education, because now the technology is there so that the students can learn much of this material, mm-hmm. you know, online.
And there's a whole issue to accreditation.
Exactly. And I really started taking this seriously recently. The first was when the American Council on Education started to look at how that they were going to accredit these courses. They said they're going to use the same way they do regional accreditation, you know, for universities. They're going to use for these online courses, which means they're going to start accrediting these in some way. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is that just a few weeks ago, it was announced the state of California's university system, particularly San Jose State University, is going to start offering credits for MOOCs in a way to reduce costs, and the whole system is going to look at – is now evaluating, you know, how they're going to give credits for these courses. And so it's a reality. It's happening, you know, and we have to make sure that we are well positioned to take advantage of, you know, what's happening and making sure that we are reacting to the times and we're not going to become irrelevant. That's the big challenge we have to worry about.
So I want to talk about how you respond to that, but it seems to me that it changes the whole economic model. And just as a few seconds ago you were talking about, you know, hiring a recruiter to be in the Illinois market to get students, I mean, all of a sudden it changes the way you position your university, because now you're not just competing with Madison and Platteville and mm-hmm. Oshkosh. You're competing with every university in the world.
That's right. And a couple things you need to I always think about is, first is, there's always going to be traditional students. You know, we're always going to have students that graduate from high school, need to go to college, find themselves, and do more of a traditional experience. But there's an even larger segment of our population that are going to look at new pathways to get their education. You know, I've said before that there's over 700,000 adults in Wisconsin that have some college education but not a degree. So these online courses and these online learning opportunities are a great way for them to continue their education in a non-traditional path. And so the market, you know, we joke around that we may have 30,000 students on our campus are typically traditional students, but there may be 50 or 100,000 students out there that we could do mostly through these online opportunities. And so and that's one of the things, one of the reasons why I'm very proud of the fact that we are a leader for the state in the flex degree options. You know, we're, again, looking more at these non-traditional students and offering them unique opportunities through these online to further their competencies and learn more and use life experiences potentially to get credit. So there may be ways that with these online courses they can get credit without really taking the typical class because they have the life experience that shows that they're competent in certain areas.
Just think, your MOOC students don't bring cars to campus.
That's right. No parking worries, right?
Mike Lovell is the chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. You're listening to the Chances Report on WUWM. So, all right, so now you've got this. You know that this threat, if you will, or this evolution is going to take place. You can't stop it. What's your message to the community, to the campus community, about how UWM needs to respond?
Well, I think one of the things I said is we have to realize that it's a reality that this is happening, and we really need to embrace the changes. And, you know, I gave the example in my plenary of kind of Borders and Barnes & Noble bookstores. I mean, a decade ago when this really, in the 90s, late 90s, when this really hit their world in the bookstore market. And the mistake that Borders made is they invested a lot into their stores. They, you know, kind of refurbished their stores. They invested a lot into CD and DVD sales. And just in the time when that market was going digital, you know, online. And what happened was is they – and they also outsourced their online sales to Amazon, which, mm-hmm. as we know, what happened has happened to Amazon since then. They voiced it alone. And then Barnes & Noble, on the other hand, really invested in their own online sales within the organization, but they also developed their own e-reader, the Nook, and I really believe that those things helped Barnes & Noble succeed in what I would call revolution in their field, just like we want to succeed in revolution in our field. And so it's really, you know, we have to make sure that we are relevant, you know, going forward, and making sure that we do take advantage of these opportunities. And I'm not saying that we're going to develop a whole bunch of MOOCs on our campus. We may in certain areas. One of the interesting things was I'm going to be going to Washington, D.C. in a few weeks because they really would like us to develop a MOOC around our freshwater sciences, mm. you know. And so I'm going to be meeting some folks from the National Science Foundation and the Gates Foundation to see if we can maybe do that, because we're looking at a leader here. But we need to find a way that we can use these MOOCs and other online things that are available outside of, UWM to supplement what we do and make what we do better.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, that, which is I think maybe part of this, how you respond, is something you mentioned very briefly, and that's the flexible option program, mm-hmm. which UWM is obviously a big part of. That is moving forward in some limited areas,
yeah.
right?
So we really have four different programs that are moving forward with the flex degree option in College of Health Sciences, Nursing, Technical Writing, and Information Sciences are the four schools and colleges that step forward. And this is a funny story. At the last Board of Regents meeting, Aaron Brower, who leads the UW System Initiative around the flex degree option, gave an update presentation. And it was pretty exciting for me because the presentation was all about UWM. Because in the state, UWM was the only university that came forward when the governor and the system announced that they were going to be doing this. We were the only ones that were ready to implement this in the fall. There wasn't another campus in the state that was ready to for these online programs. It shows that how advanced we are in our online education already. And after the presentation, I had several chancellors and regents come up to me and say, well, how did you get your campus to do this? And I was able to smile and say, I didn't do anything. I said, this was just a natural progression for some units on our campus. So when the announcement came out, they immediately stepped forward and said, listen, this is what we want to do. We believe this is a market that we can fill. And so it was just fantastic. I was very proud of the fact that, we're kind of leading. We're the leaders for the state in this area. We're not following. We're kind of using this to define the path going forward.
Mm-hmm. It would seem that this is a bit of a complicated area because, as we discussed on an earlier program, one of the goals of this is to, give credit to for people who have some coursework previously or have some other experience. But it's tricky in terms of how that's evaluated, is it not? Because,
yeah.
You want to maintain your accreditation across the
exactly.
board.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important that we focus on quality. I think going forward, whether it be the flex degree option or whether we somehow incorporate MOOCs into our current course offerings and the way we supplement that, is that where we add value, or I think the UWM really, I think we need to focus on, is making sure that the quality of whatever educational experience the students have is of a standard that we currently have right now. And I think that's what our focus is, because we don't want to get this watered down and we don't want to degrade the other things that we're doing on our campus. And so I think that really is, when we talk about, and again, ultimately, to talk about where, with this all this stuff being online for free, where's the monetary component? Where's the money can be made? And I think it's actually the way that you actually accredit or give credit for the educational opportunities, the experiences that the students are having.
Mm-hmm. Let's shift gears a little bit to a slightly different student experience and a community experience. We've talked a little bit on this program previously about the role of athletics at UWM. And, I saw you at a Panther basketball game not that long ago, and you had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun. The Panthers actually won a game. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
It was at the Clatchy Center. And look, I'll be honest with you. I've been at a lot of university gyms in my life, and the Clatchy Center is not as impressive as most of them.
Yeah.
So what does that mean for the future of basketball? What is the future of athletics at UWM and its Division I status?
Yeah, sure. And, we've gotten a lot of questions recently about our athletics, and I think that it's very important for us to maintain our Division I status and to maintain our athletic programs, because when you think about our student population now, we have 15,000 students that live within four blocks of campus. We want more things for them to do on the nights and the weekends. Athletic is a great venue for them. It also builds a sense of pride, not only in our current students, but in our alumni, and also helps us get people from the community onto our campus, which is something that I'm a big believer in. I want to get more people from the community on our campus, because we have a lot of great things going, whether it be our athletics or be things in our arts programs. Our students have a lot of things to offer. The other thing is that, when you think about what our athletic programs stand for, they are true student athletes, and I'm very proud of the fact that we have more than one third of our athletes, over 100 of our 300 student athletes are academic scholars on the academic honor roll for the Horizon League. Recently, we just was at a banquet for our women's soccer team, and for the graduating senior class had all won the Horizon League and been to the NCAA tournament all 4 years. Their cumulative grade point average for the team was 3.6. Mm. So they are achieving excellence on the field and in the classroom. And these are going to be our future leaders going out into the future. And I think that one of the things that we're doing with our Division I programs is we are really training you know, the leaders of the future. And it's something that I think that we have very few athletes on our campus that are going to play professional sports.
And they know that, yes. So they're concentrating on their studies.
And it's amazing. Yeah, our highest graduation rate of any cohort on our campus is our student athletes. It's 80% graduation rate. It just, you know, and to have it, again, the cumulative grade point average for all of our student athletes is over 3.1, you know, and so they're just a great body. So athletics are very important for a lot of reasons, you know, on our campus. And I think that, again, engaging our 140,000 alumni, it's another really big thing that we can do is, you know, help us engage those. And being back on campus, you know, again, I think one of the things, the biggest contributor to our athletic department's budget is the students. And so making it easy for the students to get to the games is very important to us.
When you hired your last athletic director, Andy Geiger, there was a lot of talk at that time about building a new facility, and there was stories in the paper about how the Horizon League was giving UWM an exemption to stay on the campus until something could be built. I haven't heard anything new about anything being built. Is that on track, or are you not going to be able to stay in the Horizon League?
No, first of all, we're looking at a staggered approach on doing a lot of our facilities. One of the things that Andy has pointed out in his time here is we really have a facilities deficit on our campus. Besides the Clatchy Center and the arena, almost every one of our teams uses that arena. And so it is literally this time of year is busy from 6 in the morning till midnight with all the different teams, you know, whether it's, you know, our basketball teams, our track and field teams, our soccer programs, our volleyball, you know, they're all, even baseball, they're all using that indoor facility to practice. You can imagine what it's like, particularly when you have basketball games going on out there. And so it becomes a challenge. So one of the things, the first thing we're probably going to be doing is building another practice facility right next to the Clatchy Center, actually connected to the Clatchy Center on the parking lot that's right in front facing Downer. Would be the very first thing you're going to see happening. Once we get that done, we have a lot of plans to do a baseball and track facility that, again, would help decompress that. And finally, we are looking at different plans for actually building something on campus. And it looks like, you know, again, we're doing just pre-design. We have some architects looking at this. And it may make the most sense to actually do a basketball arena where the current right within the current arena, but actually go down. Right below the floor of the current Clatchy Center or locker rooms, and it may be easier. The cheapest option may be to go down, you know, so you walk in and you go down when you get to the arena and just, you know, do it that way. But we're still in the planning stages. Not only we're completing our strategic plan for athletics, which also includes a facilities plan, and we have architects looking on how we can do this. And that option, going down in the current arena, is somewhere between a half to two-thirds less expensive than doing a standalone arena, whether it be on our campus or somewhere close to campus. Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you, the other part of the question was the Horizon League, because you got a waiver to when you moved from downtown to campus. How important is it to be in the Horizon League, and will you be able to continue a waiver with the league?
So I think, preliminary, the Horizon League is, as long as we have a plan going forward on how we're going to address the issue, they're willing to work with us, which is great. And I would just say that the Horizon League is a great fit for us. Again, as I mentioned before, it is a student first, athlete second league. You know, and you take a look at other campuses within the league, very similar ratios of students on academic honor roll, you know, to the total number of athletes. And so we're very proud of that to be associated with the Horizon League. It really does focus on the student leadership that they get through athletics.
Mm-hmm. So the athletic program, as you're talking about it, as you're envisioning it, is this something that you're going to have to ramp up fundraising for, or is this money you're planning to get from the state?
No, it's definitely fundraising. You know, we need to, again, it's like with anything else, diversify revenue streams. And we haven't had a long history of raising a lot of funds for athletics, certainly not the way Madison and other big sports programs have. But the reality is that there's only 20 athletic programs in the country that actually make money on athletics. You know, all the rest of us, which are hundreds, if not thousands, you know, actually support, you know, the athletics budget centrally. We want to minimize that. And one way to minimize central funds that are used for athletics is to do fundraising. And so things, you know, for scholarships and for facilities and other things, you know, generating endowments for different athletic programs and coaches' salaries are all things that we're working on right now. And as you know, we are going to be we're kind of heading into a new campaign, and athletics has a very aggressive fundraising, you know, initiative as part of that campaign.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a fun night for me and my daughter to be okay. there and watching the game, so that was fun. Yeah. We're out of time. Thanks very much for joining us once again. Always good to have you on board.
Yeah, thanks, Dave.
Mike Lovell is the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. You've been listening to the Chancellor's Report on WUWM. I'm Dave Edwards. Thanks for listening.